This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to Goodfellas Minute 133.
I know I'd go from rags to riches if you would only say you care.
Hello and welcome to Goodfellas Minute, the only podcast that analyzes the Martin Scorsese picture Goodfellas one upset Karen minute at a time. I'm Ron Richards, and with me is Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan.
Hey.
And continuing to join us, he hasn't left us yet, despite no Carbone, Mr. Matt Gourley of the James Bonding Podcast. How you doing, Matt?
I'm good, and actually that podcast is relevant to today's episode.
Ooh. Oh, fantastic. Is that a tease?
I guess. I mean, we can open with it. You can take a guess why, whatever you like.
Oh, wow. Well, let's recap what happens, and then we'll go dive into that.
Talking about the anticipation already, so yeah. This is great.
So this minute starts with Karen squealing into the driveway and arriving home very upset, and it ends with a slow shot through the diner as Henry arrives to meet Jimmy. So there you go. Karen driving very fast. She's upset. I would like to note before we get into the James Bond connection that where Jimmy's swag stuff was when Karen peels out and Rockville Center, mm-hmm. where they live, where their house is, that is a 45-minute drive.
At least.
At least.
Depending on the time of day.
Yeah, it's exactly. Midday, clearly.
Yeah.
But if it's Saturday, it could be awful.
Yeah, so considering as upset as Karen is when she arrives, imagine how she was a half an hour ago on the parkway.
Sitting in the LAE.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Having a panic attack, but crawling along. It looks like and that jacket's warm.
Unless Jimmy's been following her on foot, like in that Creepshow movie, just doing that gesture behind her in a rearview mirror the entire time.
Jimmy follows.
It's just haunting her.
You have to sleep with somebody else, and then Jimmy follows them. Thank you. Apparently, you're the only one who saw it. I like that Henry is waiting at the door with a pistol.
Oh.
There you go.
There it is.
Matt? It's James Bond's Walther PPK.
Really? How does Henry Hill get James Bond's gun?
Well, it's not the actual gun.
Oh, all right.
Same model.
It is. Yeah. I think those were just popular for a long time. It's crazy how long those guns were used, and probably still are.
Well, they're small.
Is it because they're little guns?
Yeah, they're easily concealed.
I guess so.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, I don't think they were so massively produced, too, that even when I was a kid, I was so into World War II, so I used to go to these, like, I don't know, history conventions and stuff like that, and then they had these guns everywhere, and they weren't even that expensive.
Hmm. Wow.
Were you buying firearms as a child?
I was not, no.
I've got like 20 of them.
I was not. I know I should have prefaced that, but I remember seeing them all there. And they're, you know, it was like the people you would imagine. They were like real hardcore gun nuts with these booths, and they would just be set like lines of MP40s and Walther PPKs and just kind of come on up, and they were probably like $100 or $200 at the most.
I feel like the fact that it's James Bond's gun directly leads to the fact that they would be very common. Because, I mean, that might be the first pistol model I'd ever heard of, other than maybe like a 357 Magnum, you know, which is
Or a nine millimeter Beretta.
Yeah, but it's not cool in the same way.
Well, there was a show called Beretta.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So at that point, that gun was very popular. But
yeah,
in the post-Roger Moore era, yeah.
The original Bond, he used to use a little like small caliber Beretta, and then they made him give it up for the Walther PPK, and that's the one that stuck.
So I love the shot of Henry at the screen door with the gun. Like, that's a great, like, that's, you know, like, he's in, and this goes back to, I think he was waiting for her to come home from meeting Jimmy. But then he runs out to see what's the matter, gun in hand.
Like, put the gun away.
They're in this, they're literally around the block from a school.
Like, is that not normal where you live? Because where I live.
So he runs out to see what's the matter with Karen. Karen is very upset. She's been crying for 45 minutes. Is she upset because of the traffic or because of Jimmy?
Both.
Oh, I mean, yes.
She probably had to at one point get on the BQE.
Oh, that'll get anybody.
Well, no, she had the BQE to the belt, most
right,
likely.
She's going exactly.
If she's going to Rockville Center, she's taking the BQE to the belt going past Kennedy. That is just like a death.
That is a nightmare. I've looked like that picking people up from the airport.
You don't want to have
this
a gun
is some real inside New York stuff, guys.
You don't want to have you don't want to be upset and have a gun in the car and be on that route because somebody's going to get shot.
Well, luckily she didn't have the PPK, but
yeah,
I mean, it's a whole mess.
Oh,
terrible.
I can hear the fatigue in your voice when you guys talk about this from just having experienced that a bunch.
Have you ever had to drive from Brooklyn to Queens and
no.
it's three miles? And it took 3 hours because I have.
Yeah. But I've driven from Santa Monica to the East Side, and it's,
I have to
imagine the same miserable experience.
I used to commute. No, it isn't. Because I used to commute from North Hollywood to Santa Monica, and that was not as bad as driving the 8 miles to Connor's house.
Now, here's the problem is that the stretch of the BQE right before the Kosciusko into probably past Park Slope, you know, like kind of past where we were hanging out a lot back then. It didn't matter what time of day it was. Like, I've driven in L.A. and I've driven from Santa Monica to West Hollywood or whatever, but I've done it at like 2 a.m. and it takes 10 minutes, right?
You can never hit traffic at that time.
Yes, exactly. You hit stopped traffic at 3 a.m. and stop traffic at 3 p.m. It's just a lose-lose situation.
No, it would happen in L.A., but it would happen much more randomly. Like, it would happen, but you could count it on the BQE. I mean, it didn't matter.
You know, many people have asked us what podcast we're doing next, and clearly we should do a podcast about commuting.
Sounds great.
We've stumbled upon the answer, guys.
Well, what's funny is, so Matt, you listen to the show, right? And as you mentioned, you live in Los Angeles. And have you spent much time in New York at all? Or
I've been there a few times, but I'm in no way familiar with like the terminology of the expressways and all that stuff.
Okay, so when you've listened to this show for 132 episodes up to this point, and you hear us talk about the parkways with the passion that we do, do you think we're crazy? Do we just come off as like insane?
Oh,
people?
No, not at all. In fact, I like hearing like what you just said, like that it would actually take 45 minutes to get from point A to point B. That's something I just do not consider in watching this film. And so that adds a pretty fun element to it.
Yeah, I mean, like going back to when Karen's across the street neighbor accosted her and Henry, you know, drove immediately to her to help her. That was like an hour drive. It was just like, it's not easy to get around Long Island. That's the thing.
But sometimes you guys still use insider information where you'll be like, he just went from the Del Vecchio overpass to the Hammersmith undergo. And you guys all laugh, and I'll be like, I don't know what that means.
Those aren't good places.
Jargon. Anyway, I don't know. I could talk about the parkways for hours.
Well, that's our next podcast.
Wait, before we move on, by the way, do you know who Robert Moses is?
I don't know. Is he a bridge man? Someone that they made a bridge after?
No, he's the architect of modern New York City, both good and bad. He's a villain and a hero.
He designed.
Like, you mean from like establishment to establishment? Just some of his stuff is great and some is horrible, or what do you mean?
Well, some of the stuff he did was good, and some of the stuff he did was hard. Like he was lobbying. Like he wanted to usher in, the cars into New York City, and had an enormous plan to build LA-like freeways through Manhattan, which would have decimated, you know, hundreds of year old neighborhoods and things like that. And so people kind of hated him towards the end of his run, but he did amazing things like building the parkway system and building the beach that's named after him and other things. He was like a city planner.
You're making a stronger and stronger argument for our next podcast, Ron, the more you talk.
Robert Moses Minute?
Robert Moses Minute.
Yeah.
So before we move on to the diner, we haven't really talked about Karen's all-leather getup yet.
I feel like we've talked about it every day that she's been in it.
We've mentioned it.
We talked about the jacket.
Yeah. So she's wearing the jacket and the skirt, and possibly that leather was made in Kanpur, India, because that is the leather city of the world.
That's ironic.
Kanpur, India has over 700 tanneries.
Yeah, it is ironic.
It is ironic. But recently, I had almost 100 of them closed down because they're basically destroying the Ganga River by dumping all of their waste.
I'm going to go and say, you meant to say Ganges?
No.
Oh, it's Ganga?
G-A-N-G-A.
Because actual, no shit.
Yeah, they're destroying it because they're dumping all their waste into it, all these tanneries, and they've shut 100 of them down. There's still 700 left. But that is where much of the leather in the world is tanned.
Wow.
I know what you're going to say. I don't have the answer for you.
Okay.
Oddly enough, the city of Milwaukee, Wisconsin is the sister city of Kanpur, India. I don't know why.
Oh, huh. There's a whole network of sister cities. It's crazy.
Yeah. I don't know what you get out of that.
It might be meaningless.
They put signs in the airports.
Do you mean like it's a meaningless gesture that they're civic pride?
Yeah.
Well, okay.
I feel it's some sort of, at the heart of it, it's a cultural exchange. Like what happens is that the cities find some reason to connect, and I don't know what Milwaukee and what was the city you're talking about?
Kanpur. Kanpur.
Or
yeah,
I don't know why
they would, but what's interesting is that like Chicago's sister city is Warsaw, Poland, which has direct ties to the Polish community in Chicago. Right. Yeah.
I'm so curious, my city, and it's got 5 sister cities.
Well, I imagine it's a bit of a popularity contest. Like, everybody wants to be the sister city of Sarajevo. I don't know.
So. Listen to these, though. Järvenpää, Finland.
Wow.
Ludwigshafen am Rhein, Germany. Mishima, Japan. Vanadzor, Armenia. And Zixing District, Beijing.
Wow.
It was at least two Axis powers. And Beijing. So, I would look into the city council there because there's some issues going on.
So what's interesting, I live in San Francisco, and San Francisco has 18 sister cities.
Jeez.
Cork, Ireland, Bangalore, Naples.
Share the wealth.
I know. Ho Chi Minh City, Manila. Oh. It's very strange.
I feel like I need to reel this show back in.
Sorry.
Okay. So let's talk about the fact that I don't believe that the real Henry Hill was nearly in as good shape as the Leota Henry Hill at this point in his life. He runs out there in his open shirt with his A shirt on, and I was like, he looks really good there.
Yeah, he's very thin. Well.
Yeah. I mean, he's a cocaine addict. But
that's true.
Same time, like, I've seen what Henry Hill looked like, and I was like, I don't think that ever happened.
Yeah. Well,
you saying this is a Hollywoodized version of Henry Hill?
A little bit. Hmm. A little bit.
He's also, they can't afford food.
This is an example of if you're living in the suburbs, why you should not buy a house with 10-step staircase up to your front door.
Yeah, I don't think it's easy to move your legs in a leather skirt. There's not a lot of give there.
And you see her grasp the handrail like twice. Like she needs help to get up the stairs. She's very upset.
She can only help with one hand because he's got the gun.
Yeah, exactly.
Is this split level, Ron?
No, it's not split level. When they walk in, you don't have to make a decision. The whole problem with split level is when you walk in, there's stairs that go up, stairs that go down. Remember when he was making the meatballs?
I remember this episode when you talked about this, and you really got a thing. I could just feel it. Because you've already explained this, and so you're explaining it again as if, like, can you believe this shit?
Thank you.
There's your next podcast right there.
Yeah, split level minute. Yeah, anyway. No, it is not a split level because when he was making the meatballs, he went to the door. There's no staircase down or up there. It just happens to be,
Is it a raised basement?
Yes, I think that's what
I still can't get over the fact that the way you phrase it is not like, do I want to go into the living room or go into the bedroom? It's you have to make a decision. Like, what are you going to do with your evening? Because God knows if you go down one, you can't go back up the
other. Right, that's the thing is that I walk in the door and I'm instantly confronted with the decision. Do I go up or down?
But you can also turn right or left at most doors.
Well, true, but yeah, I mean, but if you turn right, there's probably a place to hang your jacket, and there's not much right or left.
He's saying there's an extra step into being home.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you're inside.
You walk in, you're home.
Right.
This one, not quite. It's
you're inside, but you still have work to do. All right, so So he helps Karen in. Karen's upset, yada, yada. And then it cuts to a POV shot of Henry walking into the diner. And it's a tracking shot through the crowd of the diner. And I've watched this maybe 17 times just on repeat.
I want to do that, but I want to just – the one thing that was interesting about her getting home is that when Henry – like Henry is – he's actually really concerned there.
Yeah.
And it's one of the first times where I think that we've seen like him genuinely concerned with the fate of his wife. He seems compassionate, and he's never seen that way towards her.
Well, he beat the hell out of Bruce. He came running.
Well, that was a long time ago.
There felt like a little bit of selfishness in it to me. Like, he's compassionate for her, but at the same time going, I want to know what you found out, because this is what I'm talking about here. See?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's the Cold War between Henry and the rest of
the... Did he say it like
the...
Edward G. Robinson? What'd you find out, see?
But, yeah, he's concerned. And he's, yeah, he's worried. He's worried for his life and for her life, for everyone's life.
Now, here you could think that he seems to have known where she was.
Well, the thing is that let's recall the scene right before Karen meeting with Jimmy is Karen out of the shower and Henry telling her that they're dead and she not believing him. You know, like, he just told her, listen, if we stay here, we're dead. And then she goes to see Jimmy and thinks that she almost died. And so now she's with Henry. Like, she agrees. Like, this, that had to happen for Karen to accept the witness protection program that will come.
Whoa, what?
What? We'll see.
Spoilers.
All right, back to the diner.
Yeah, back to the diner.
I think the happiest person in this entire movie is the kid pouring the syrup on something.
Yep.
But it's probably delicious. He's just going to town. Look at that thing.
But when you were a kid, the syrup dispenser at the diner was one of the coolest things in the world, right?
Yes.
Right, that mechanism.
Yep. It's like that, like, flat piece of metal that slid when you press the trigger. Yeah.
It's timeless, because I have taken my kid to IHOP, which is disgusting.
Whoa. They could be a sponsor in the future.
It's fine. He does not like things that have lots of flavors, but there are four there, and they each need to be manipulated, and he's willing to try something just because he wants to play with every one of those syrup dispensers. And they don't ever change.
Your mom would try to do it. You'd be like, no, I'll do it.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah. Yep.
It's the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah.
It felt so futuristic.
It took us 3 days to get to food, so that's kind of a record.
I think he's got pancakes.
And it was a stretch, too. It was not the focus of the scene. But you found a way, and if they gave awards for this kind of thing, we would still not be considered, but still.
There's like a grumpy pedophile behind him. There's all kinds of characters at this diner.
Once again, they are at the movie equivalent of the Sherwood Diner, which is where they were when they found out that Tommy was whacked, and then the feds, when he goes, let's go for a ride, fuckos. This is Jimmy and Henry's main. This is their diner. This is their meeting. I wonder, like, is that their table?
It's like Seinfeld.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, when he comes in, he knows the hostesses or the various hostesses' names, and they know where to take him.
Yep.
Do they make somebody else get up? Are they that important still there?
I don't know.
They keep it open for them?
Maybe.
So many questions. Yeah. I think one of the things that's interesting now is that you hear in the VO, the tone of Henry's voice has changed completely. It's way more contrite. It's much more subdued.
Yeah, his look is very sheepish, too.
Yeah. Like, everything about it has changed as we've sort of passed to the other side of this life. And also, like, he's saying, like, if you think about, like, his description of the mob before, it was all very, it was like, oh, well, listen, we were just, you know, we were just working hard. It was, we were just a place that people couldn't go to the cops, blah, blah, blah. And here, like, if no one tells you, they're going to kill you. Like, he's admitting all the things that he had never admitted to himself before.
Yeah, and the Dolly in the beginning is so slow, it makes you feel like, obviously it's his point of view, but that he's coming in so slow and cautiously and looking at everything as you watch it. I feel kind of jealous that you guys watched this minute by minute, because when you're watching it all as one, you're just kind of taking it all in, but you must really like dissect every shot and its intentions and stuff. And I did that with these 5 minutes. It was really cool. And then I feel like I'm reading too much into it, but it was pretty fun.
There's a bit of that.
Yeah. I mean, this movie is a wonderful combination of very, very simple shots that capture a moment in time and the naturalness, like shooting on location on Long Island in Queens, in Brooklyn, you know, at this diner, which is still a diner in Maspeth that you can go to. And it probably looks exactly the same, you know, like the attention to detail about how this world was in 1980 is like, that's one of the things I love about this movie, you know, like and the thing is that it happens so quickly that you don't, unless you're, you know, life moves pretty fast unless you
No,
thanks.
But unless you stopped to look at the kid with the syrup and the dude in the booth behind them, which is weird.
That is the benefit of the show like this, is we really are discovering a lot of things we hadn't before.
Yep.
There's a lot of richness in it.
I like the ongoing debate that keeps coming up about what is intentional and what was lucky happenstance, or what seems like it was supposed to be intentional, but it wasn't at all, and nobody noticed it until you sort of read that into it, you know, as you're watching. I think that one of the things they did really smartly was, I feel like they did keep some things pretty vague and unintentional so that you can read what that kiss in the first minute this week, you know, the kiss goodbye, it wasn't really anything there. They just did it straight up, but you're trying to read into it. Henry does that through the whole movie, where I can't tell if Henry's acting like a bad liar or he's being sincere or anything.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah, it's great stuff. All right, anything else on this minute?
Yeah, sorry, Matt, the fuck count's still zero.
That's all right. I just want to say that when it freezes, when you're watching it minute by minute, you haven't got close enough to see the De Niro smoking, and it looks like he's just sucking his thumb when it freezes.
Yeah, it's the last second of the minute where he turns the corner, you see him at the booth, and you know, we can guess that he's smoking, but yeah, you're right. The way it looks, it just looks like he's sucking his thumb. That's very funny.
He's stressed out.
Is this the last sort of like significant tracking shot? I don't know. Might be. I'm saying keep a note on it, because this might be the last one we get to see.
Well, we got a great shot coming up tomorrow, so stay tuned for that. That's going to finish up for minute 133. Tune in tomorrow for minute 134 and that fantastic shot that we're going to talk about. Till then, you can follow us on Twitter at GoodfellasMin and on Instagram and Facebook at GoodfellasMinute. And you can find all of our episodes at GoodfellasMinute.com. Matt, where can the good people find you on the internet?
Just at my name on Instagram and Twitter, Matt Gourley, and on Letterboxd, too, the film website. Do you guys use that?
No. What is that?
Well, it's, yeah, check it out. This little hunt.
All right, cool. Something to do. All right, so if you're looking for something to do, you can support the show by going to goodfellasminute.com/support. And there you can find a link to shop via Amazon and give us a little taste of the action, as well as you can go to patreon.com/GFM, where you can become a direct supporter of the show by becoming a patron. And later this Friday, we'll be opening the books and giving two patrons mob names. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Looking forward to Matt participating in that. So if you have any questions or things to note, you can email us at contact@goodfellasminute.com. And until then, I really want to go back to a diner on Long Island now.
I knew it was coming to that.
Or will I go from rags to riches? My fate is up to you.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.